Brewing is as much about the process as it is about the product. At its most satisfying, brewing creates a culture and a community that goes beyond beer geekdom to make deeper connections. It's about learning, sharing, and creating. It's a touchstone that can make people who've never met instantly friends. Beer with Strangers starts now.
Welcome to episode 90 of Beer with Strangers. I'm your host, Tony Russo, and I'm joined this week, as I'm joined each week, by Doug Griffith. That's you.
Hey, how are you doing today, Tony?
Very well. You're wearing a red shirt. You're wearing a pink shirt that I turned red trying to get the red out of my face.
Very red. Anyway, I'll start with the weather report today. Sunny and wonderful outside. So if you haven't stuck your head out the door recently, look outside. It's a wonderful day to be outside. Enjoy this wonderful spring weather. And winter weather.
Right. They say one of the things that, just to give you my weekly update on my fig trees, there's some threat of frost on Sunday, some threat of wet snow on Sunday. So if you listen to
cover your fig tree,
kids, if you have them, I'm going to cover mine this weekend. If it looks like it's going to snow, all sorts of fun stuff this week. But first off, we decided to start putting the events in the front. That way you guys have the entire show to think about whether you really want to come and write them down. And this Saturday, that is probably tomorrow, because I'll have this up on a Friday morning. I believe you're listening to this on Friday morning, in which case you have to have your face covered by Friday, which leaves all day Saturday for you to come to the wine event here.
But that doesn't happen until late afternoon, 5 o'clock. We're having a wine makers get-together here at Extreme Brewing. It'll run a couple hours probably, but we'll have some tasty morsels to taste, and hopefully everybody who comes will bring some wine. One thing worth noting, Jay Talkington, who is Brimming Horde Meadery, who is getting ready to open the meadery over outside of Lewis on Route 9 very shortly, he plans to be here and actually bring some of his meads for you to taste.
Looking really forward to that. I've had some of his mead. I had a pear mead, which I really enjoyed, especially given that I'm not crazy about pears. So it was good even for being made of pears.
And he makes some unusual stuff, which are really outstanding in flavor.
Right. I enjoy the thing that people – what I would like people to get about mead is that the sweetness is something that it's something that you – once you're ready for it, it's something that you come to kind of learn to appreciate. Is that the right way to say it, do you think?
Anticipate.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but not all of them are sweet, but there are a lot of them, especially the ones that are higher in alcohol, always turn out to have a little sweetness to them.
And the texture, of course, the texture of mead is thicker than you expect. You're like, oh, it's like wine. And it's, I mean, I guess it's kind of honey wine. I guess, I don't know if it's...
Yeah, it's honey wine.
If that's what they still say about it, but it's fermented. It's fermented in a long term. It's not a short, quick fermentation.
Yeah, a lot of them take longer to mature just to get the flavors come out right.
And that's the thing. It's got this kind of complexity about it that, you know, most of us are used to drinking wine. And most of us are used to drinking beer, but mead is still kind of like an up and coming thing where we'll have it. You don't have it often enough to develop a sense of it. So when you have the opportunity to try it, you really should. Yeah. And I think it's going to be great. I think once he opens his meadery, we can we'll go up there and try some of that. And I'm really looking forward to that.
But I think you can associate it more with a red wine where it takes time to mature and some of the tannins have to mellow. Same thing with mead. It takes 6 to 9 months, maybe even a year for it to get where – some of them are drinkable. Some of them are drinkable very soon, but a lot of them need some time to age and mature. So, but come have a taste.
Yes, come have a taste for
and
sure.
Bring some of your wines for us for everybody else to taste.
And these events are always so much fun. I've been to the beer ones. I've not been to a wine one yet. But what I like about the beer ones is that people are. It's just fun to hang out and talk about what you do. And one of the things that I always say that I like about coming here is people at all levels of from pro to newbie to occasional hobbyist to every weekend brewer Or every weekend vintner or whatever.
Winemaker.
Everybody enjoys themselves and everybody's really open. You're not going to get, you know, everybody's happy to be here and everybody's happy that you came here, which isn't something you get, for instance, at softball or bowling or any of those things. Plenty of the news this week. We're going to start with some home brewing stuff because the Big Brew is coming up, and that's also kind of an event here that we're going to talk about, although
we'll be brewing something. Generally, we do an all grain that day and just participate in the trade.
Now, they have they said which beer it was going to be, but I didn't look. Did you get a chance to look?
Did not, but there's usually two beers they recommend everybody brew, and they just try to get a tally of how many people brewed beer on that day so they can give a – we brewed 600,000 gallons of beer on May 7th.
Right, and well, what's cool about this is they're doing one for the 500th anniversary. It's a German beer for the 500th anniversary or something. I just can't remember what it is, so we're going to look it up real quick. Sorry to take my eyes off the camera. They're going to brew a – summertime ginger ale.
Isn't their second one too? Usually they have a couple. Both of these recipes, says both of these recipes.
Summertime ginger ale, all grain, and then alt beer.
Yeah, okay.
Now, I know what a ginger ale is. What is an alt beer?
It's another German type beer.
Beer flavored.
Yep.
I love beer flavored beer. I didn't come last year. I guess I came the year before it was that I was here for that. And that was a lot of fun. They had, I guess it was like at 1 o'clock, everybody was supposed to toast or something like that. So, if you can make it out for that, it's fun. If you're going to brew something, let us know, send us pictures. We'll put them up on the SureCraft Beer website or on the SureCraft Beer Facebook, just so everybody's kind of connected that way. Especially if you're out of town. I mean, a lot of the in-town folks belong to the Delmarva United Homebrewers Association. But for our out-of-town listeners or for our friends down at Wallops who maybe don't come all the way up, send us pictures. We'll post them on the Facebook page.
You'll be famous.
We'll make the internet famous. And along those lines, I wanted to get your take on spring beers. So the Marzins, I guess, are coming out, or they're already out.
Yeah, I mean, they're generally brewed earlier in the year, let them lager for a while, and then have them out generally April or May time frame.
And
May beers.
And the story that we have posted, I'm sorry, the story that we have posted here is about a homebrew competition where a chamomile beer beat a bacon-flavored beer. And I'm done with bacon, so I have no problem with that at all. But what I wanted to get your take on was the idea of a chamomile beer, because I haven't had one. I guess is that
we have actually the Triple Around the World has chamomile, has about an ounce of chamomile in it, and it's very tasty.
As soon as I saw that, that's what I thought. I thought that would be a nice beer to have because it's got that flowery but not bitter. Yeah, I guess. Right.
It comes out very well in a beer.
And do you feel like? I mean, I guess it's clear that since there are more flowers in the spring beers may have more flowers in them. But is it something that you've ever experienced? Is it something you do lighter beers
lighter beers. Generally not it's not that you can't, but generally you can stay away from porters and stouts in the spring and summertime. So you're into your lighter beers that are more refreshing, less heavy, I guess you'd say. So lighter because of the spring warmer weather. So
yeah, I'm a huge fan of chamomile, so I think a chamomile would be awesome. What do you guys have coming up for? I guess the next time you brew is going to be on May 7th. Is that
probably? We haven't got anything else scheduled. We had class last week and don't have anything else scheduled at this point.
What did you guys end up doing last weekend?
Coffee Saison sitting right there.
Oh, there you go. That's an awesome beer. Because you see coffee, so you think it's going to be a dark beer, but it's not. But it's got that rich flavor, but it's also got a little bit of Saison spice. Is that the right word to call it? Yeah. The spicy flavor. I love Saisons. I love coffees, so there's nothing wrong there. We at SureCraft Beer were asked to participate, and I don't know if it's going to come off yet or not, but there's supposed to be some sort of like vintage car slash beer festival that they were talking about having. And I was talking about how much I didn't – it's not that I don't like vintage cars. I just don't get vintage cars. Like I don't get going to car shows. Uh-huh. And so they were asking me a lot of questions, and I kept saying, you know, I'm not your demographic. I don't – that's not my kind of thing. I'm not saying that it's a bad idea.
A lot of people do. Like you look at the cars and see how people have reworked them, shined them up and –
Right, right.
And a lot of work goes into refurbishing an old car.
And I was kind of making fun saying to my boss, you know, that's like, I mean, I'm old, but that's like an older guy thing. That's not. And she's like, I don't know. And so I just after having that, it wasn't an argument because I said, you know, whatever we're going to do, we're going to do, and I'll help out. I don't have a good plan for what should happen at a car show because I don't go to them. Because I'm not 1,000. And then I switched over to the internet, and actually it's a thing again now, like that the vintage car shows are very popular among the kids today. So it just proves how middle-aged I am. That's how I'm just old and sad is the point of that story.
Oh, it's sad. You're not as old as I am.
I'm sad to be old. You're old and not sad. Like, you know, I've got like a mookiness about me. So next up, actually, well, I want to talk about the Cigar City
story. Investment. Yeah.
And did you want to tell that story, and then we'll talk about it?
Well, I just find it's and I think yes, okay. There's a whole bunch of breweries now in the country that are being bought up or having large investments in. A good percentage of what they are worth. And I think you probably are right. You came up with the analogy that they're doing it because it's a good place for return on investment. And yes, compared to what you would get out of a typical savings or possibly even stock, it may be a more steady income and less likely to have a loss. So it probably is a good investment for these holding companies to buy a percentage or buy even up the whole controlling interest.
Right. And but unlike Budweiser, it's not to increase their profit or to have a better control over the market. It's an investment in a brewery they believe in. Their plan, a lot of these companies, and Dogfish is one of them that they sold, I guess, 15%, you were saying, to an investment firm. And the idea is that these investment firms want a reliable income stream. And with interest rates low and with other sectors kind of wishy-washy, you know, beer is a strong sector. And the breweries that are getting bought into, Cigar City, Oscar Blues, Victory, these are what you'd call like the staple craft beers.
Solid breweries.
They're not going away. You know, they might have a good year or a bad year, but they're not going away. And it's nice to have a constant stream in your portfolio. So I don't think that these investment companies are in it thinking that they're going to see 20% growth every year, but they are going to see a return rather than a stagnation. And right. it's going to continue to go up.
And from what I read about Cigar City, they were not having any problems or issues at all. They just needed some capital to advance the amount of beer they could make. And I think that was the same thing with Dogfish. They just got an influx of good capital to get more equipment to promote more of the business.
Right. And I think that also Dogfish, because right after – not right after that, but just before that, they were ramping up their distilling operations. So I'm sure that – an amount of that went to their distilling operations. And I feel I know a little something about booze as well as about beer, and their gins and vodkas are really, really just like the beers. They're really unique. They're quality products, but they're also an acquired taste. It's like, if you think you're going to, if they don't, the vodka is the one I like to talk about because it has a flavor, but it's not flavored vodka. They use flowers and herbs and different additives to get a flavor, but it's part of the distillation process. It's not
gin.
Right. It's like gin, except it's vodka. So I don't know what the rules between vodka and gin are. But the Dogfish vodka is as good as I've had, and it's good all by itself, and it's good. I mean, I would make like a screwdriver or anything out of it, although I guess people can. But I think anything where you want the vodka forward, you can't go wrong with that. And the gins are the same way. They just stand out on their own. And I think going forward, even as the growth of beer begins to kind of level off a little bit, we're going to see, you know, craft liquor is number one with a bullet now. And I feel like that's where investors are going to get their big returns from and Dogfish Head, because it's just once people realize how good that right now it's like, oh, look, this is a high end vodka. It's vaguely expensive for vodka, you know, not kill you, it's like $35 a bottle. You know, which my day-to-day vodka is like $20 a bottle, yeah. But
I think you probably see more of the breweries doing something similar to this. I mean, Dogfish has a very good name, a very good following. So why not get into another market? I mean, they've been doing, distilling at the restaurant for quite some time now.
Right.
But have limited capacity. So I think with the larger system that they've installed at the brewery to be able to increase capacity, they've got good name recognition already. So I assume with that, more people would buy it because they know the Dogfish name.
Right. And I think they'll get up and out pretty quick. As I understand it, they're going to be in Maryland and Delaware now, or pretty much now. And they expect to hit Jersey by the end of the year. And those have always been good markets for them for beer as well. It was the same thing with beer. They went to Delaware, New Jersey, and then Maryland with the beer. The point is that I think a lot of our friends on the internet get nervous when they're like, oh, this brewery got sold, that brewery got sold. And I think there's a difference between getting sold to a competitor and having a capital investment firm come in and say, this is the kind of thing we need to build up our portfolio because we need to know we're going to get cash, and breweries are an excellent place to get cash.
But I was surprised that Sakar City gave up their majority sharehold of the company. I think the new company has 56% and they only have 44 now. But if the investor is not going to be doing anything with it, it's fine. But I guess it gives them controlling interest. They've put a huge influx of capital in it. They want a controlling interest.
Well, they had already had a deal with Budweiser, or a tentative deal with Budweiser. So you get the impression that maybe the folks at the top are ready to start to take a less hands-on approach. You know, maybe it's an exit strategy.
That's not what I read into it, but I understood that from what I read that the Budweiser didn't seem to just match what their philosophies were with the brewing and with the investment company and what they've done with Oscar Blues. They felt more comfortable with that investor.
Right. So the question is why give up a majority stake? And that's something that I don't get either. Unless you were – I was talking to the new owner of the Captain's Galley in Ocean City, which is now going to be called the Ocean City Fish Company. They redid the whole inside. It's beautiful. And I was talking to him, and one of the things that I said about brewers that I was saying to him is like, you know, you don't get into this because you want to do what other people tell you to do. You get into this because you want to do what you want to do. And so when you sell a majority stake, that's almost like saying I don't necessarily want to do what I want to do anymore. You know, So yeah. It's weird to see. I mean, good luck to them. I like that. What's the High Lie? Is their IPA? High Lie IPA. Yeah. I think it's perfectly acceptable. Good IPA. So I'm happy with it. And again, that'll bring us to our next story, which is brewers in the community. One of the things that this story was talking about, which was cool because we talk about it every week, is the idea of how craft breweries rely on the company, on the community rather than on marketing,
right,
in a big way.
So you got local communities have more loyalty to a local brewery. And I think we see that around here a lot with, and your philosophy is you don't drink anything from further than 100 miles away. So
right,
you try to stay local, you are local and you drink local.
Absolutely. And one of the things that was interesting that they brought up in the story is that one of these, when these larger brewers are moving east, generally they're moving east. It mentioned Sierra Nevada here, but it seems it was the same for, New Belgium when they came out. They don't just want cheap labor, although they're happy to have cheap labor. They want cool downtowns. They want places where they can be part of the community, where the brewer community can kind of shine. You know, they don't want to be out in the middle of nowhere and have a factory. They want to become part of a town, and they want it to be a fun town. They want arts and entertainment. They don't just want a workforce and a tax break.
I found it interesting that Sierra Nevada went to Asheville and actually asked the locals Brewers Guild, the Brewers Association, for their input, asked them to vote on them coming to town before they actually said they would. And once they did come to town, I found out that they are helping the local breweries. And I guess it's all part of the scratch my back, I scratch your back. But they're offering reduced costs on grain and hops that they get in for their own use.
That's fantastic. And one of the things that I know Dogfish has been a big part of here is they have labs, and not everybody has labs. So yeah, Dogfish Head is always happy to look at your beer or to look at your water if you need it looked at
and see what's wrong with it and
right,
improve. So,
and what makes this more sustainable is that people have more than a financial stake in having a local brewery. Like if you have a Ford factory in your town, you pretty much just have a financial stake. Like if Ford leaves, it's going to be terrible, but it's only going to be financially terrible. But when you have a brewery, there's a cultural thing. It's not just where you get your beer. It's also where you go to hang out. It's where your friends work. Brewing is one of those really unique jobs that's also a hobby. You know, lots of people.
Well, a lot of the brewers started as home brewers.
Right.
So, and they stay close to their roots and believe in the local community. So,
and before many of them, if not most of them, started, they were part of a community someplace else. They were like, they're part of the homebrew community and they all hang out at this brewery. And then one of them opens a brewery. And then they remain part of the homebrew community, and they also hang out at that old brewery, but they also hang out at the new brewery. Like I was at Third Wave. I saw Toby, who now is at RAR. You know, he was back and at Third Wave. I bump into Aaron from Burley, you know, regularly. I saw him most recently, I guess, at Specific Gravity. But, you know, they patronize their own culture, not necessarily their own business.
Right. I mean, they're going to see what other beers are being brewed and maybe make something similar or make something that isn't similar.
Right. Just
hang out.
It's just about staying in touch, which is, and part of that is you want to be able to have like an arts community. In Berlin, which is just what comes to mind, you know, there was a strong arts community before there was a brewery, and now since the brewery, the arts community has kind of expanded beyond just the visual arts. You know, there's a writer's enclave now, and there's a performing arts, you know, enclave now, where there really wasn't that kind of strength before because it changes the culture, changes the vibe of the community. It's not just a financial incentive. And so the way that these breweries defend themselves against places like Budweiser is just that, by making themselves part of the culture, not just the financial stakes of the community.
Well, I think it was worth noting, too, that even Budweiser InBev, who bought up some of the larger regionals, have found that ingrained because of the tap rooms that they have locally. They found that they would lose a large portion of business if they closed the tap room down.
Right.
So they kept the tap room open.
Because it's just what people like. I'm more likely to drink. Third Wave is just my example because it's closest to my house, right? I'm more likely to drink Third Wave straight from the tap. If I'm going to go out and get beer, I'll go and get a growler filled there.
That's because you can walk there.
It's because I can walk home. But like, for instance, when I went to my brother's 30th – oh, I didn't even get to talk about that. We're going to run out of time. When I went to my brother's 30th birthday, I brought him a couple of bottles from Third Wave because they have a bourbon barrel series. Mm-hmm. And those are – you know, that's a valuable present because it's something that not everybody can get. You know, you kind of have to –
limited quantities.
Yeah, it's limited and it's local. So, you know, he's in the beer business himself. So it's kind of a cool thing for him to have, and you know, it's a little bit of cultural cachet for him. Like, yes, you know, I have this bottle of beer that you can't have. Like, you don't have it.
But he's in New Jersey.
He is in New Jersey. They make Black Dynamite, Black IPA, among other things at 902 Brewing. Shout out to 902. I just wanted to say briefly, I was up there and I went to my first beer garden.
How was the beer garden?
It was so much fun. I have never, ever, ever drank that much beer in my life. It goes, you know, cause I got the huge cup and it goes down just as smooth in the huge cup as it does in the small cups. Cause you don't have to get up as often. I figured I was there and I was going for it. So I stuck with just whatever their Oktoberfest beer was, just something brownish and 5% alcohol that I can drink all night. And I totally did. We drank all night. We had such a wonderful time. There were maybe 70 of us. We kind of took over a big section of the beer garden. And what was interesting was, and it's not a knock on the beer garden, and I was talking to one of the brewers from 902 about it, is that they didn't have a ton of local taps. I don't think they had any local taps.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they didn't have 902, which is one of the closest breweries to them. They didn't even have Flying Fish, I think, which is one of the bigger New Jersey breweries. And we got to talking about it, and I said, you know what? This isn't the kind of place that if you're a small brewery, you're dying to be, because they don't really care. I mean, they care that they serve good beer, but they don't really care
that's local.
Yeah. They don't really care what beer they're serving because, I mean, there were 70 of us drinking constantly. It's a huge place.
You know, as long as the beer is flowing.
Right. And it's a huge place. There were 70 of us and we took up two of the 60 tables they had there. It was a massive, massive place. And, you know, they were grabbing and going and they had a beer list, you know, that had the ABV and I think maybe a brief description. No, they had it by type of beer. So it was like Oktoberfest beer. These are the three we have, you know, Pilsner. These are the 10 we have. I had a Pilsner. It was fine. But what I was talking to him about, and probably something I should have brought up earlier in the podcast, is this idea of places that aren't where the bartender's not going to be able to say, where the bartender's not going to be able to talk about your beer. You know, I mean, I wouldn't – if I had a limited
you
amount
think
of –
just because the place is so large?
Oh, it's so large and so busy. I mean, it was – and I'm not saying that they're – I'm not saying that they're – that they only have crappy beer. That's what I mean. They had plenty of good beer, but nobody was going to take the time to talk about the beer.
Too busy.
Right. So nobody was selling any of those beers there any place but there, whereas if you're on tap at a smaller place – that's selling the beer. They're like, hey, here, try this. It's local, you know, and they can tell you something about the beer. Then you might buy it someplace else. Yeah. Like, I literally don't remember which beers I had. I know I had a couple of Oktoberfests, and I knew they were German, and I know that I can always just – I mean, if you get an Oktoberfest from Germany, it's probably going to be okay. That's like a safe bet, you know. And so one of the things that I wanted to start thinking about, and maybe we'll revisit this next week, is this idea of – you know, staying with small taps where, you know, you're not one of 10 IPAs on tap, you know, and where the people who are drinking it there can also walk around the corner and grab one, you know.
Yeah. So your whole party couldn't even fit in third waves.
Oh yeah, no, we couldn't have, we couldn't have fit in third wave. And that's what I mean. We couldn't have fit. We could have fit in Evo's dining room, I guess. But and maybe in their bar area. It was just this place was massive, and it was a lot of fun. I don't want to give you the impression that I didn't have a lot of fun. It's just not. I mean, I was buying beer by the gallon. That's not really, you know, that's not a mass craft beer quantity, kind of thing.
Right.
I guess because what are they? 30? They're not 32 ounces. Are they 32 ounces? The big steins?
Yeah, probably liter.
Right.
Size,
so I'm drinking. When you're drinking beer all night, 32 ounces at a time. That's not the right venue for a, for
it can
a
be, but it's
7%. Right. You know,
you don't want anything too heavy,
right?
In alcohol,
right? And also nothing too complicated. And they had a couple of complicated beers there, I'm sure. But and that's something that I know better. Like I'm not gonna get a complex beer and drink. You know, I think I had 5 glasses. Yeah. So I'm not going to 2, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15. I'm not going to drink, 170 ounces of 7% beer. That's really complex because I'm not going to taste it after a while, you know, which is what the beer garden thing is about. It's like you can drink a lot. And the only thing that I found out is when you drink that much beer, I wasn't sick from the alcohol. I was sick from the carbonation and the sheer space it was taking up in my body. You know, I wasn't like sick, but like the next day I was like, my stomach was like, I am not happy with you at all, young man. But we're going to bring it to the close, pull the train into the station. Again, gentle reminder, if you're still with us, that the wine event here is on 5 o'clock,
yeah.
5 o'clock.
5 to 7-ish or something.
On Saturday the 19th, which is tomorrow night if you're hearing this on Friday, right. Or which was March 19th if you're hearing it way in the future and you missed out, and I'm sorry for you. Always come to these things. They're always a lot of fun hanging out with people. And
bring some of your wine to taste.
Bring wine to taste. And as always, just make sure you check the website, extremebrewing.com, extremebrewing.com, or extremebrewing.com. Click on everything else and you'll get to the classes. That's also where you can find the links to our show here. And if you're listening to it on iTunes, you can follow us on social media. I am my name backwards on Twitter. That is OSSURYNOT. I'm meanest on Twitter. You can find me on all the social media that way. Also through extremebrewing.com. And until next week,
drink what you like and be happy.
Beer with Strangers is recorded at Extreme Brewing in Laurel, Delaware. For more information about the show and for beer news and commentary, visit stateofthebeer.com, where you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes and follow along on whichever social network you're least likely to ignore. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. The state of the beer is strong.